This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporter with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Aruba Tourism Authority, NY World Class Market, New England Regional Council of Carpenters, Hammer and Aruba All Inclusive Resort, Rodenheiser Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, JetBlue, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, Brennan Smoke Shop, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmowers, Boxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Well, tonight could be the night, finally, where the Red Sox are put out of their misery. The tragic number is one. That's all it's going to take at this stage, and I'll give you the very simple math. Right now, the Cleveland Indians and the Tampa Bay Rays have 90 wins. That is the maximum the Red Sox can finish with. So the only way, and again, not that you care, I'm just giving you the math, because we all know it's over, but the maximum number of wins the Red Sox can get to is 90. 90. They're 80 and 72. They have 10 games left. Cleveland already has 90. Tampa already has 90. Oakland has 92. As soon as Tampa and Cleveland get that 91st win, or the Red Sox suffer one more loss, bye-bye, it's over, it's done. 617-779-0985. We'll open up the phone lines right away tonight on the Baseball Reporters because, to the best knowledge, they haven't released anybody today, in case you're wondering. And obviously the big news here in Boston today, Antonio Brown, wide receiver in the New England Patriots, released by the organization this afternoon in the wake of the latest developments involving him and a woman he formerly hired to paint a wall in his house a couple of years ago. And if you haven't followed the details of the story, I'll spare you because it is a baseball hour. Nonetheless, Antonio Brown released, done. His time in New England is over. As for the Red Sox, again, 617-779-0985. Here is my question for you as it pertains to the Red Sox. And this thought was triggered by a caller either last night or the night before, I honestly can't remember, who said, you know, you got to rip this thing apart. You got to, like, aside from Bogaerts and Devers, sort of what Jim Murray said in the last segment, aside from Bogaerts and Devers, you should be moving players. You should trade David Price with Mookie Betts. You should trade Nathan Eovaldi with Mookie Betts. Try to rid yourself of all the money. Dump J.D. Martinez. You free up some dough and start at ground zero. Murray, you feel that way?
Yeah, those two guys are your building blocks. The rest, especially the starting pitchers, I can't trust them in regard to their health going forward. I'm just thinking about Price and Sale as of right now. Eduardo Rodriguez, while a phenomenal season, I feel like that was a bit of a fluke and also an injury risk he himself. So, yeah, those two are your building blocks. Start over with those two.
Jimmy Stewart, would you?
100%. I thought that Jimmy in Brighton was brilliant when he said that to you.
Okay, so I'm just at the point where I say that even if they stay with what they've got and I'm taking Mookie out of the mix, I don't think the Red Sox next year are that bad. I'm not telling you they're good. I'm not telling you they're championship caliber. But they're not dreadful. They will still have Bogaerts, Devers, Benintendi, Christian Vasquez. Like, they'll have some players, and they will still have a handful of pitchers. They'll still have Eduardo Rodriguez. And have you looked at the dog food around the American League? So here's my point. As bad as the Red Sox pitching was this year, they still were on the cusp of contention for a playoff spot for a good chunk of the year. It should not be blown up, I don't think, but I'm eager to hear from those of you who believe that it is. And I guess at the end of the day, the question is this. How dire do you believe their circumstances really are? How dire? If you listen to me, they should probably blow it up. At least if you listen to my tone, because that's certainly the picture I portray. That part I'll admit. They might need two starting pitchers. They might need two relievers, including a closer. They're going to need a first baseman and a second baseman. They have no money to spend, really, and they have no help in the farm system coming. So that feels like, to me, a significant dilemma. At the same time, take a good look around the league. Detroit, Baltimore, Kansas City, Seattle, Chicago, the Angels, Toronto. Do you realize all of those teams I just rattled off, all seven of them, don't even have 70 wins yet? 70. The Red Sox, to those teams, are light years away. The Red Sox are 14 and a half games ahead of the White Sox. They're 12 games ahead of the Angels. So now look, they're 9 behind the Indians, 9 behind the Rays. They're in that dreadful or dreaded middle class in the middle of the league where, you know, you're not quite as far from the top as you are from the bottom, but you don't suck with the dregs. And it shouldn't take that much time to get back to World Series caliber. It shouldn't. Next year might be pushing it. But I look at it and I say, would you really be shocked if the Red Sox went 90-72 next year and made the playoffs as a wild card? I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. No, it's going to take a lot. It's going to take Chris Sale coming back and pitching well, or even if he doesn't, David Price coming back and pitching well, Nathan Eovaldi being representative and not the pitcher he was this year, and maybe someone like Julius Chacin entering the rotation and giving you a 10-10 record. So I'm not telling you these guys are world beaters. I just don't think they're completely cooked either. That's sort of where I get off from other people. 617-779-0985, but I don't think a lot of you agree, sadly. Sean's in Marlboro. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, so, Tony, I don't know if you remember my call, but I was the first person to call up and say, blow up the Red Sox months ago.
Okay.
And you and Felger laughed at me, but now you can't get as much money for, or you can't get as much back for a guy like Mookie Betts. So, the difficult thing is, how long is it going to take the Red Sox to rebuild? So let's say it's going to take you 4 years to draft and develop players. Well, you may as well trade Devers and Bogaerts. So it just depends on how long of a rebuild you want to do. But
Sean, why do you think it's going to take 4 years?
I didn't say it was going to take 4 years.
No, that's what you just said. You said if it takes four years, you might as well trade Devers and Bogaerts.
I said, if you think it's going to take that long. So the question is, what approach to the how long do the Red Sox think it's going to take?
Okay, what do you think it's going to take?
I think because of the farm system, you might be able to get a good year in the big leagues, but it's going to be hard to sustain. So I think if you want to have sustained success, you're going to have to build the farm system, and that's going to take 4 years unless you get the opposite side of a Dombrowski trade, where if someone overpays for Bogaerts or Devers or anyone, I would do it in a heartbeat.
I wouldn't. And so, again, I don't think it's going to take 4 years either. Again, and I think the part you're leaving out is you might be able to get two prospects for Mookie. You should be able to get two prospects for Mookie Betts. So now, look, when are they going to be ready? You're not trading for 17-year-olds with Mookie Betts. You're going for double-A players. Or you're going for high-A, a guy who's about to enter double-A, which means he could be in the big leagues by the end of the year. With the way it goes now, I wouldn't rule that out. I don't think they're 4 years away, and they don't need 4 years. They might be 4 years away from getting their farm system back to where it was at its height under Theo Epstein or Ben Cherington. They might be 4 years from that, but 4 years from big league contention? No way. No way. See, again, this is where the perspective is warped. This is where you people get out of whack. It's like, and this also speaks to sort of the mentality of this in Boston now, that all of a sudden you don't win a championship and you rip it apart and start over. Xander Bogaerts is what, 26? Devers is 22? You're going to walk away from those guys? Are you crazy? Joel's in Florida. Go ahead, Joel.
Hey, Tony, how are you?
Good.
A couple of questions. I heard you, I think it was your show, that you were talking about for a GM to come here.
Joel, I tell you what, I got to put you on hold because the connection is so bad. I'll try to come back to you. Okay? I'll try to come back to you, I promise. Let me go to Andrew, who's in Taunton. Andrew, what do you got?
Yeah, Tony, I don't want to rip this thing down completely, but I do kind of agree with what you said yesterday about next year being kind of a bridge year. And the reason I want to do that is because that's what Theo would have done, and that's what Theo did. He recognized after 2004 they had to take a step back in 05 and 06. They won a championship in 07. He recognized the same thing in 2010, and except for a major collapse at the end there, it looks like he was right there too. That team in 11 actually was a pretty good team for a little while there. So I think a nice little bridge year next year.
So, yeah, so Andrew, look, these things tend to come in cycles. Again, I go back to the Theo era, and I think that there was some, you know, it was instructive on some level. 03, LCS. 04, World Series. 05, playoffs. 06, bridge year. So 3 years in the playoffs, one World Series and another good run at it, and then a bridge year. And then the next sequence. 07, World Series. 08, LCS, Game 7. 09, Playoffs. 10, bridge year. Then 11, they came back loaded, and that thing collapsed internally for lots of reasons. Now, some of which was that they threw money at free agents. You know, Carl Crawford, that was that all that whole nonsense. Adrian Gonzalez, etc. So there was some, you know, there were some giveaways in there. That team should have been together for a few years, though, and should have made a run at a world title. Internally, they combusted. So you don't have to take a major step back. In 06, the Red Sox won 86 games, I think it was. In 2010, I think they won 90 or something close to it. So we're talking about a 70 and 92 team next year. This is where I think people are overreacting a little bit. Cam's in Taunton. Go ahead, Cam.
Yeah, Maz, I didn't realize until I saw him on at the game yesterday. I forgot Tony La Russa was part of this front office still.
Yeah, he won't be for long.
No, they announced he's staying.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that. When did that happen? Today?
Today.
Oh, all right. Sorry, a lot going on today, as you
reassignment.
Guys know. Reassignment?
But he'll be here.
Okay, go ahead, Cam.
Well, you see, I'm glad you guys just answered my question, because, Maz, I was going to ask you, do you think there's any chance that he's going to be the next GM?
No. God, no. Please. What he did in Arizona was a disaster. So they're going to reassign La Russa, huh?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, assistant GM Eddie Romero said, quote, "We realize we're a young front office, and Tony helps us in a lot of ways," unquote.
Okay, so they just want La Russa to bounce things off as a sounding board? It's interesting.
I talked to someone that they made it sound like he's got like a
figurehead.
He's got like a nice grandpa feel, and a lot of people really like him behind the scenes. So whereas you heard from, at least going back to Shaughnessy's column, when you heard the rumblings that Dabrowski was going to be out, they didn't like how he acted, and he was kind of like a loner and kept to himself, and Frank Wren, who also got canned. La Russa is more inclusive to other people there.
Okay, interesting. I just assumed that once I saw Wren was gone, I assumed La Russa was gone too. So it's been, again, kind of an eventful day. Haven't had my eye on the ball today, Murray, as you know. So that's interesting to me that La Russa is staying. But the roster? Look, the state of the pitching staff is what it is. I mean, I hate to throw a Belichick line at you. But, you're going to have to get some luck there. Even so, David Price's situation is not as dire as that is of Chris Sale. And Nathan Eovaldi, while he's not worth $17 million per year, also isn't a guy who should pitch to a 6 ERA. He's better than that. So I think last year, you fell in love with Eovaldi because in a year where he was better than he usually is. Now you're pissed at him in a year that he's not as good as you think he is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just look at it and say both of those guys should be functional pitchers. And when you look at the dog crap around the league, the Red Sox are going to be should be in contention for a playoff spot next year. They really should. I would not completely obliterate this roster. I wouldn't. But fixing the team is going to require some skill and some creativity. And that's something Dave Dombrowski showed none of while he was here. But again, I'm curious as to your perspective on the roster. Is it that dire in your eyes? Because believe it or not, boy, talk about a little switch. It's not that dire to me. I mean, they're in a spot. But the team on the field is not. We're not talking about the Orioles here. And the Tigers. We're not talking about that. We'll get back to your calls next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
We have the Sox coming. The Sox coming. This is the Baseball Reporter. Tony Mazzarotta, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We'll get right back to your phone calls. Again, the state of the Red Sox, and I'm talking about the roster now. I'm not talking about your opinions on ownership or the general manager search. I'm talking about the roster. When you look at the roster, are they that bad going into 2020? Are they so bad that you want to rip it apart? Or do you look at that roster and say, you know what? If you get lucky with a couple of moves, you can actually win a wild card spot next year. Because for all of the concerns I have about the Red Sox, if they get lucky with a couple of moves, I could see them winning 90 games last year. I can't see them winning 100 and winning the division. And I think that now, in the state of baseball, that's what it takes. I mean, again, the Yankees and the Astros won 100 again. Houston's won 100 games 3 years in a row, and the Yankees are what? That's 2 years in a row for the Yankees? Over 100 wins in the year, and the year before, New York was in the playoffs too. So you're not that kind of team anymore. But given the garbage that exists in the league, you're telling me you couldn't be a 90-win team next year if some things broke right. And I admit, you need some breaks. You need some breaks. But it's not like you have zero talent. You're not Detroit. You're not Baltimore. You're not one of those. I mean, so to me, there is, you know, there's still room there. Let me go back to Joel, who's in Florida. We didn't have a great connection the last time. Joel, you there?
Hey, Tony. Let's see if it's any better right now.
It is a little bit. Go.
All right, just two quick questions. One, I thought you had talked about a week ago that, you know, you wouldn't want to be the GM coming into this team with the payroll that they have. And the second question is, I don't understand why you and other pundits are talking about Mookie so easily being sent away. I thought that he and Bogaerts were always, for the last few years, on the same level of quality that you'd want to build around him. So that's all I had to ask.
Okay, so look, on Mookie, it's simple. I don't think he wants to be here, and he's going to be a free agent a year from now. Bogaerts signed. Bogaerts is going into his free agent year and signed. I think your chances of doing that with Mookie are zero. As for, I wouldn't want to be the GM, I wouldn't. It's not an easy job. It's not. And the challenge in front of them is extremely difficult. But that doesn't mean impossible. Donovan's in Kansas. Go ahead, Donovan.
Hey, what's going on? So the guy who's saying that, you know, we need to blow the team up, and they were talking about that. I think Bogaerts and Devers could possibly be two future MVPs in the league. And I do have one question. It might be crazy, but why can't Brock Holt be an everyday second baseman?
So, Donovan, look, I suppose he could be. I mean, again, effectively he has been in some way, shape, or form. Holt has always struck me as the kind of guy that, you know, the more at-bats you give him, the diminishing returns, right? The old theory of diminishing returns, just because something works over 50 games doesn't mean it'll work over 150. And to me, that's Brock Holt in a nutshell. I think that's Brock Holt's career. I think that's what he is. So, you know, I remember there was a guy, Bill Ballew with the Worcester Telegram, used to say it's a game of exposure, so to speak. The more you put a guy out there, the more he gets exposed. And only so many guys can handle it. So being an everyday player in the big leagues, not easy. Not easy. Andrew Benintendi, for all the criticisms I have of him, he's an everyday big league player. An average one, I think. But that's what he is. He's better than a bench guy, which means you're going to have to pay him. So he's not horrible. But, you know, Benintendi's not a franchise guy. I do have a concern, though, about Bogaerts and Devers. It's one thing to have the kind of year they've had with Mookie in the lineup, with J.D. Martinez in the lineup. If both of those guys are gone, are Bogaerts and Devers the same players? And I have my doubts. I want a third bat in there. I still want J.D. Martinez in that lineup. Rays and Revere. Go ahead, Ray.
Hey, Tony, I think you have it right in that. I think this lineup can be tweaked and they can be a wild card team, but I think that's the way it's going to go. But I actually have a different view of it. I'm ambivalent because I stopped watching the Red Sox a couple of years ago because I gave them their 3-year rebuild where they, you know, last place 3 times in 4 years. But when they came out of it, it was boom or bust. We never knew if they were all in. 2 years ago, they didn't go up there to get a slugger. They faded. Last year, they went all in. They won it. This year, they didn't pay the closer. They stink. And, you know, I stopped watching the games. And I'm a guy who's your age. They shouldn't lose guys like me. And what I want is what the Astros and Yankees have. You know, a strong minor league system, a manageable payroll, and they're constantly in it. Okay.
So Ray, listen, I'm gonna stop you there. I'm gonna stop you there, and you're welcome to call anytime. I just feel like sometimes you ramble on. So just make the point and move on. The what you want is something sustainable. That's what you want, sustainable. And I don't disagree with you. You want a longer term model that has a farm system that's pumping out players so it's clear that there's like an assembly line philosophy to it. Dad, Mookie Betts wants to go? Fine, we'll trade him. We get a kid in AAA who's not Mookie, but he's pretty good. We'll put him in the lineup. We'll be fine. That's what you're looking for. That's kind of the idea that they had under Theo. At least that was the philosophy. It didn't always work because you don't always draft well enough to execute it. But years ago, I remember someone telling me, when you have a good farm system, you should be pumping in a player and a half every year. Every year, a new guy into the system. 1.5 players every year. So maybe you get a full season out of one guy, and the other guy comes up in July. And you keep pumping those guys in, you'll be fine. In the long term, you will be fine. The Red Sox don't have that. And don't give me Michael Chavis and Bobby Dalbec and guys like that who are fringe prospects. The Red Sox player development system sucks. It sucks. It has sucked for a few years. They need to fix that. That's going to take time. In the interim, I'm not tanking. Not in this market. Ed's in Whitman. Ed, go. Ed, you there?
Hey, Tony. Yeah, Tony, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say, it just seems to me that it's like so reactionary here. You know, you win the World Series and then you don't have a good year. Let's blow it up. I couldn't agree with you more about keeping, Devers, Bogarts. Both of them had great years, especially Bogarts because he got his money and he still had a great year. And if you get rid of those guys and blow them up, you're still stuck with the same issues that you have with pitching. It is what it is. They need a strong general manager. Make them make Mookie Betts trade, and then just have direction. You don't have to win the World Series next year, and I hope they don't want to go with that. I hope they want to set a direction in which the team is going.
So, look, Ed, I think that's a critical thing. I mean, they need a long-term philosophy, a long-term plan, something they can stick with. They just need some sort of plan. This fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants thing, changing direction every other year, it's not working. And it's not enjoyable. That's the thing, is that there's no investment that you make that stays there year to year. I don't know any other way to explain it. So it's a schizophrenic existence. It's impossible to invest in it as a fan or a follower. It just, there's no continuity to it whatsoever. So again, starting in Theo's last year, 4 first place finishes, 3 last place finishes, and 2 collapses. So they've won 2 World Series in there, but it hasn't felt anything like the first half of this ownership's tenure when Theo was the general manager throughout. That felt consistent. It felt like there was continuity to it. This thing's all over the place. It's just hard to enjoy it. It's hard to stay engaged and invested when they lose you 3 weeks in or they hold you all the way through and you have no idea what's coming next. That's a hard way to live. Just a hard way to live as a fan or a follower of the team. So look, I get emotional about the Red Sox. It's just, they drive me as crazy as anybody else. And so I thought it would be a good opportunity on this topic to bring in someone that I think has a very level-headed, even-keeled perspective about where they are, where they're going, and how to get there. Alex Speer of the Boston Globe will join us after Murray gets you caught up in the headlines.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
I told you, I get emotional about the Red Sox. I always have. I did a good job of hiding it for many years when I covered the team. And, you know, when you're around the team, you understand it. You talk to the people on a day-to-day basis. You have a much more level-headed, clearer point of view than you would if you're sitting in a studio flapping your gums like a complete jackass, which is what I do for a living. But nonetheless, it is beneficial to talk to someone who has a much more even-keeled look. So I want to bring in on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, Alex Speer of the Boston Globe, author of a new book, Homegrown, about the homegrown players and approach of the Red Sox and winning the World Championship. In fact, Homegrown, How the Red Sox Built a Champion from the Ground Up is the book. We'll get to that in a minute. I do want to pick his brain on that as well. But Alex, first, let me ask you. When you look at the Red Sox predicament at the moment, and I'm talking about going into 2020, not now, because we all know where they are now. How dire is it? Like, do you look at the roster and say this team's not going to make the playoffs next year? Or do you look at it and say, no, there are still a lot of building blocks in place. And with a couple of lucky breaks and some right moves, they'll be fine.
I certainly think there are a ton of building blocks in place. You know, when you do have that kind of anchoring point of Bogaerts and Devers in the middle of the lineup, and it is a lineup that for most of the year was operating at a pretty elite level, depending on what happens with that, you know, J.D. Martinez / Mookie Betts question, if they have that kind of an offense, they're in pretty good shape. As much as the bullpen is maligned, they've actually built some really interesting pieces. I don't know how replicable it is for Brandon Workman to be one of a historically dominant reliever, which we've kind of overlooked in plain sight this year, just in terms of, you know, what opposing hitters have done, et cetera, et cetera. Darwinson Hernandez is a really nice late innings piece. So some of the issues that trip them up at the outset of the season, I think, look a little bit more smoothed over if they can, again, they have to add, but they've got some good foundation pieces. It's not dire. It's not like you wouldn't have, you are not going to look at that team and say that you should take a wrecking ball to it if you can still afford to have anywhere from a $200 to a $240 million payroll for next season. But it is going to be tricky because they're entering into a very new phase, a very different phase than what we've seen over the last 4 years when they were just adding around when they were just adding to what was an incredible foundation of young players.
So, Alex, how do you see it playing out? And I'm just curious as to your perspective, because as you said, the big ones are Mookie and J.D. Martinez. So if I asked you, and I'm asking you to go from your gut now, if I asked you, do you think J.D. opts in or opts out, what do you think?
Opts out. That's my gut. I just think that I think that, you know, he's coming off of a remarkable run of a few seasons as an elite power hitter. And this is, you know, I think that if not now, when, right? Like, and he's someone who is interested in seeing what the full value is. And the fact that he's had not just his own personal offensive impact, but that he's raved about as a guy who has kind of an external benefit of helping along other guys who maybe need improvement around him. I think that reputation does add to him a little bit in terms of what teams might be willing to invest in him, or at least that's going to be his perception as a guest.
Okay, so I want to start with JD because I think that's how the calendar works, Alex. That's the first thing that comes up. And is it clear? Do we know by when he has to decide? Is it within a few days of the World Series?
Yeah, those opt-in, opt-out decisions are always the first couple of days after the season ends.
Okay, again, so you think he'll opt out. If he opts out, I mean, he has 3 years left on his existing deal. And again, those include opt-outs after subsequent years as well. But it would either require a guaranteed deal for 3 years or a four-year deal. Do you think the Red Sox will do that?
Nope. I think that my guess is this is again just gut.
Sure.
But I think that, you know, the reason why J.D. Martinez was acquired was because they had that giant void that had been left behind by David Ortiz that they failed to address in 2017. They now have Rafael Devers, who looks like a middle-of-the-order threat for years to come, someone who at 22 is putting up monster numbers and has a chance to get better. I don't know how much better because he's been awfully good, but that question of the middle-of-the-order void isn't as pressing as it was at the time of Martinez's acquisition. So, I think that, you know, to me, my gut says that if Martinez opts out, then the Red Sox let him walk, and then they have, you know, and then they don't have to, they aren't in a position where they feel compelled to trade Mookie Betts, who remains their best player.
Okay, so let's get to Mookie in a minute, because I was going to say, I have concerns about the middle of the lineup, Alex, if you take JD out. Again, just go from 2017 to 2018, right? And I always get years mixed up. But 1 year there's no JD, the next year there is, and the Red Sox set a record, you know, 108 wins, 119
yeah,
in the World Series.
That's an oversimplification, as you well know. Like, insofar as there was a wholesale offensive lineup overhaul, like, you know, in terms of philosophy, when they got, they started having guys realizing that it didn't do them that much good to have their best bolts being hit to the ground.
Like Bogaerts.
Like Bogaerts, like Betts, like even like Bradley and Vasquez.
Okay. So I'll grant you that. So the like I get the logic. Let JD go. Yep. And you think that it's directly connected to Mookie. You don't think that they are committed to trading Mookie either way.
I don't think that. No, I think that they're probably in a position where I think that they're going to explore whether or not they can find common ground to keep him around, which my guess is that this offseason the likelihood is limited. But I think that, so if that's the case, if he won't agree to a long-term deal, then explore the market, see what's available. But it might not be that much because he's going to be really expensive next year on a one-year deal with a great interest in testing free agency. He's not Paul Goldschmidt in terms of an asset who you might be able to acquire, you know, at a relatively low salary cost. So the trade value of Mookie Betts, it's an awfully big puzzle. So I don't think that they're committed to it. I think that there's a decent likelihood that they'll explore it this coming offseason.
Okay, so Alex, I look at that and I say Mookie Betts, as we know, is a unique talent. Okay, now mm-hmm. I'm not as hooked on Mookie as a lot of other people are. I respect the talent, but I also think that there are little holes in his game that to me make him something less than a franchise centerpiece. Okay, that's just my opinion. And so I look at it and say, when you have a guy like that and he is approaching the final year and he has shown no willingness to re-up with you, don't you have to move him, Alex? Don't you have to get what you can for an asset like that?
Well, the question is, what can you get for him, right? Like, and again, that's the question is, what's the market for an elite talent who is nonetheless extremely expensive and who another team would be acquiring for only 1 year? We don't have a lot of test cases about that. We have the Paul Goldschmidt deal, again, but that's different because Goldschmidt was at the end of a long-term deal that was relatively inexpensive. And, you know, you have to ask yourself the question as an organization, is that marginal improvement that you're able to get in terms of the return, whatever prospect you're able to get back relative to that low round compensation pick, which is almost nothing that you'd get if he left in free agency, is that worth losing Mookie Betts, a singular transcendent, you know, to me, he's a transcendent talent who impacts all phases of the game. Is it worth parting with that for 1 year and affecting your competitive outlook by moving on from him for that 1 year? And I think it's an open question. I think that's why you can't say, I disagree with the premise you have to move him. I think you have to explore moving him and figure out what the trade market is for him.
Okay, so let me ask you the same question that I asked you about JD Martinez, except it comes in two parts. First, if I asked you from your gut right now how you feel, does Mookie sign a multi-year deal?
This offseason. No, I don't think so.
Okay. And as a result, do you think the Red Sox will end up trading him?
I don't have a clear view on. Again, for the reason of exactly what we're talking about, with the difficulty of pegging what his trade value is.
Okay. So, look, and I recognize that's a hard one. I just don't see necessarily the benefit in keeping him, especially if the pitching staff is in the shape that it's in. So,
well, if you think that you have a chance to win next year, right? Like if they think that they don't have a championship caliber talent, you know, if they think that they're hosed on the pitching side of things, and that is you know, a barrier that they can't overcome, then it changes the outlook of every other decision they make this winter, right?
Okay.
But if they view themselves as being competitive, having a chance to, you know, having a chance to play for something meaningful, which they're 1 year removed from a 108 win season. I recognize that a lot of things had to go right for that, but a lot of things had to go wrong for them to be, you know, whatever. They're going to be a low to mid 80s win team. I think that the 93 wins baseline of the previous 2 years is maybe a little bit more accurate somewhere in there. In which case, you know, if you think that you have an opportunity to compete, then that weighs heavily into whether or not you decide you're going to move one of the best players in baseball.
Okay, so then let me ask you the follow-up to that, which is, do they believe or are they concerned that they are going to be hosed on the pitching side of it?
That one, I think that Dave Dombrowski had an optimistic outlook about how the rotation was going to be coming back. I don't know how whomever assumes control over the baseball operations department is going to look at their pitching staff. I do think that there's whoever... They're going to be. My guess is that they're going to be far more focused on depth than kind of superstars in the next couple of years with whomever they have to replace Dave Dombrowski, and so they'll kind of build in insurance policies. But I think that they recognize that there are significant variables. Like, David Price is a huge variable. He can be very good when he was pitching in the early part of the season, reasonably healthy. He was really good. He was one of the better, like, one of the better pitchers in the American League. But there's a good chance that he'll be injured because of where he is in age and mileage. Chris Sale was dominant at times this year, mechanically inconsistent, you know, dealing at some points, obviously, with injury. So what can you expect from him going forward? Don't know. I think that it's really difficult to forecast exactly what he's going to be next year. But there is a chance that he ends up being a dominant pitcher next year, as much as we dismiss that idea just by virtue of the most recent evidence.
Yeah, if it were me, Alex, I'd punt. And when I say punt, I'm playing field position. The odds are that you're going to have a hard time winning a championship next year. So I would move Mookie, but that's just my opinion.
I think that we tend to overemphasize whatever we view most recently in terms of our forecasting, like,
sure,
in terms of our, right. Like, I feel like after the 2017 season, there was a lot of conversation about, like, you know, in public, you know, in kind of this sort of domain, about whether or not the Red Sox should rebuild at that point, right? What a terrible mistake that would have been. That was actually a really, really talented core, but there had been some conversation about whether or not they had plateaued and whether they needed to significantly alter the mix in order to get more out of them. The answer was no. They just needed to change some of the, you know, they needed to change some of the other variables. They added the right notes with Alex Cora, with JD Martinez, and with Tim Hires. But oftentimes, at moments when a really talented group underperforms, some kind of return to the mean isn't that difficult to attain.
Oh, no question. Look, I mean, I agree with that sentiment too. Before we let you go, just quickly, 60 seconds on the book. Homegrown, how the Red Sox built a champion from the ground up. What inspired it for you? And it looks like it's selling well. I've read parts of it. I haven't read it cover to cover. I typically read in sections, Alex. I don't go from beginning to end on most things. I kind of jump around, at least on a book like this. But what inspired it for you? Why did you want to do it?
In 2015, after the Red Sox signed Yoan Moncada as the most expensive prospect of all time, he went to a Greenville team that already had guys who looked like they had a chance to be really good. Rafael Devers, Michael Chavis, Michael Kopech, even guys like Jalen Beeks, Andrew Benintendi ended up on that team. I connected with them a couple of times and thought it'd be kind of interesting to see what happens if you follow a prospect path over a few years. When last year happened, I realized that I had followed every day professionally of the careers of Mookie Betts, Jackie Bradley Jr., Xander Bogaerts, and figured, you know, if you interweave those stories, tell the story of these guys, their growth individually from the amateur level to last year, as well as the organization's cultural changes that were meant to unlock the best in them, you might learn something pretty interesting about what it means when teams say, oh, we want to go homegrown. Well, it's not as easy as saying it. The 7 years that it takes in order to be able to accomplish that are a pretty, you know, can be a pretty tumultuous thing. And so I was interested in digging into that at both the individual and organizational level, and hopefully telling a story that not a lot of people had heard about, things that had been kind of in plain view for a number of years.
See, Alex, you have patience. I don't. That's the difference. No, you have patience. And I'll tell you what, we'll do this quickly, and I have to let you go. On Mookie Betts, we're going to make a little wager. If Mookie Betts is back, you win. If they trade him, I win, and the loser buys dinner, drinks, whatever.
I don't do bets. I do probabilistic models, Tony. I'm lame.
Okay, well, then we're doing a probabilistic model or whatever it is that you just said for money. All right, listen, be well. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it. Good to catch up.
You too. Alex Speer of the Boston Globe, Homegrown, How the Red Sox Built a Champion from the Ground Up. That's the book. You really should read him day to day in the Globe. Murray's right. He has some good stuff today on Mookie Betts as well.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.